Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
Hi, I'm Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe, and thank you for joining us. Today at the cafe, I'm excited to have back Matt Everett, CEO of World of Dance, to talk about Matt's other previous life, if you will, or current life as a PR agency CFO, marketing executive, business coach, and entrepreneur. Welcome back.
Hey, glad to be back.
Yeah, so I wanted, we're going to take a different tact. Hopefully the audience has listened to the first show about the World of Dance. I was very excited to have that conversation. As I said, I do admit I am a fan, and I like to watch it live if I can on the tube, but I do record it as well. Before we get going and talk about the agency side of the world, what is the best business advice you've ever received and or given, if it's different?
Well, I know that I was taught actually in my first agency job, the power of systems thinking. And that to me really, it resonated with me because I took one of my majors in college was entrepreneurship.
Okay.
And I was a pretty good student in college, but I didn't really understand how to connect the dots until I took this was in this entrepreneurship program, and they made you write a business plan. And when you're thinking about a business from all disciplines and how they all work together as a system, to me, like, that was, if you're within a company and you're an intrapreneur, as I like to say, mm-hmm. Or you're outside as an entrepreneur trying to figure out how to build a business, learning to see the big picture and how things are all connected to me is really the key to being successful in either of those.
Okay. Now, you do some coaching with entrepreneurs, I think.
I do,
yes. Talked about. When you're working with these young entrepreneurs, young business owners, do they understand the power of planning and really thinking about that? My experience, a lot of times, especially working with young entrepreneurs, yeah. They fall in love with the product. That's the be-all, end-all, and they don't really think beyond that everybody in the world's going to want this and without a lot of planning behind it.
Well, I do think that entrepreneurs are like most creatives, and so they have kind of a tunnel vision, and they just stay focused on that vision and how to execute it, and they need people who are more structural thinkers to kind of clean up the messes, you know, got left behind, and you kind of need a combination of both, I think, for, you know, there to be success. But I definitely feel like the entrepreneurs that I've worked with are very excited to hear how to make their idea successful and open to those ideas or open to hearing, you know, experiences and stories and anecdotes for how to, you know, take that idea and what's worked for others and how to translate that to their own. So systems thinking is a big one. I mean, a lot of what I teach in my coaching are the things that I learned from, you know, my mentor, who you may know, David Payne.
Yep.
Because he founded and operated a super successful PR agency here in Orange County that became an international agency and sold to a big holding company out of Canada. And he operated by this management guru named W. Edwards Deming, who mm-hmm. wrote two very boring, very dry books, but had really inspiring lessons in it. And I was really fortunate to kind of be mentored by David and have the opportunity to learn those and apply those in a variety of businesses over the years.
Was Payne your first PR job?
Yeah, I think, I graduated with three majors in college in economics, finance, and entrepreneurship, and I loved the creative side of things, but I was really good at the analytical side. And So I fought being a finance and accounting guy because my dad was an artist, and I just loved that. And I wanted to be an entrepreneur, and I wanted to do creative things. But I got a master's degree in accounting and certified this and certified that, and because I was really good at that. And ultimately what I discovered was my niche was helping the creatives build and grow their businesses, and that I could bring something to the table, and I could kind of speak their language in a way that they that resonated with them, and yet I knew how to do things that they needed mm-hmm. and didn't want to do. So obviously, even fast forwarding to today, you know, it's very much a similar environment in both the organizations that I coach and World of Dance and all of our employees, and trying to how to nurture that creativity and that, sure, you know, that creative process. But at the same time, you know, it's a business, and there needs to be a certain amount of process and structure to what we're doing in order to make that successful.
So how many businesses are you coaching right now?
Right now, very, very, very few, because
I was going to say, you don't have a lot of time.
Most of my energy is, more than 100% of my energy is being focused on World of Dance and everything we're doing there. But I do try to take time just because I enjoy it so much, you know, helping entrepreneurs that I believe in.
Are these people that know you or make a recommendation, or not that I'm trying to get you more entrepreneurial coaching jobs, but I mean, how do these people find you?
I established many years back what I refer to as the no dick rule. I don't know if I can say that
on your
station, but I believe that at a certain point in life, you realize that the most important thing is who you work with and what you're working on, and in that order. And you don't want to work with people that cause misery. Mm-hmm. And so finding really, really good people becomes the most important thing. And so when I left kind of the, I don't know, finance world, and decided all I wanted to do was find people who were working on, who I loved, who were doing great things, but mostly I just wanted to help them be successful. Mm-hmm. That became the start of, I think, really, you know, hopefully the rest of my career is just working with people that are doing amazing things and who I want to help be successful. And the entrepreneurs that I'm helping today are those who I see what they're trying to accomplish, and I believe in them as individuals, and I believe that they're good people and they want to make a difference, and I want to help them make a difference.
Yeah. I commend you on that, because I have not coined it that way you have. I want to actually say it the way I've coined it, but that's kind of been my mantra, is I just don't want to work with people that have low levels of integrity,
yeah,
that treat their people poorly. Life is too short to deal with that stuff, and it's no amount of money or anything else. And so that's, I always look at that and kind of my litmus test. I was being interviewed for a fractional CMO job, and I remember talking to the recruiter, and I sat there, this question, tell me about the CEO. I mean, is he a nice guy? How does he treat his people? And she was like, well, those are really weird questions. I said, well, I'm telling you, it's really important to me, because the last thing you want to do is put me in this spot, and I find out that this guy is a, you know what, I'm just going to walk out the door, because I don't have time for that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
some people just, they're afraid that of what would be beyond that if they left. And so they put up with, you know, being treated in ways that they really shouldn't. And ultimately that they pay a very heavy cost for that. So,
yeah, I think when we met for coffee, we talked a little bit about that. And I spent a very long time as a CSO at an organization, and every day it got to the point where it's like, why am I doing this anymore? It doesn't make any sense. And so I moved on. Let's talk about the 30,000 foot level of the agency business.
Yeah.
You worked for Payne, which is PR, and I think I got into marketing. I was from a marketing and more advertising early days. I had PR, but that 30,000 foot. So I know I have some agency listeners out there. When it comes to new business, which I believe is the lifeblood of an agency, we want to keep the business that we have, but we always have to continue to add new clients and grow.
Yeah.
What's your kind of perspective on a good way to do it? What were agencies miss, in your opinion, and experience?
Well, I think that when you talk about successful agencies, there is a culture at a successful agency that enables that success. You know, I think that a lot of agencies are not building a culture where people really enjoy the work that they're doing. It is it's all about the billable hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how to get people to be there as early as possible and stay as late as possible. You know, work-life balance is a rarity at a lot of those agencies. And so they tend to really burn people out. And I don't think that those cultures produce sustainable success. I think that the agencies that, to me, are the ones who are thriving and able to earn the respect of their clients are the ones who have values that they make sure that their policies are aligned with those values. And I think that, you know, getting back to the whole, you know, no dick rule, is that in an environment like today, where social media makes everything more transparent. You have to work for a CEO. Mm-hmm. The questions that you're asking are important, because in order for you to be successful in providing advice and helping an organization develop a brand that people, you know, admire, you can't just make that up. You can't just put that on a poster or, you know, advertising slogan and expect that that's going to work. That doesn't work anymore. And so, you know, an organization has to know what it stands for, and it has to make sure that the way in which it treats its people and operates its business is aligned with those values. So,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, when I talk to clients and prospects, they always talk about their customers. And I always say, well, what about the internal customers? How do we treat the people? When
absolutely.
We launch campaigns, we have to launch not only a campaign to them, but we have to make sure that the internal campaign happens. I mean, I've literally walked down the hallway and ran into the accounting manager and said, hey, do you like the new campaign? And she says, I don't know what you're talking about. Right. And so that was a miss by the organization.
Yeah.
And so I'm a firm believer in that.
If you want to grow, I think that every organization can put out more, you know, campaign messaging mm-hmm. and more advertisements. But the reality is that it's how do you build an internal, you know, advocacy from your employees that they're sharing why it's so special to be there and why others should be working with them. And I think that's really the secret sauce for agencies to grow.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said to a client not too long ago, you got 85 people. When they go home at night, that's 85 ambassadors for this organization. If they don't know what we're doing or what the company is about or why they're actually coming to work besides the function that they perform, then we're missing the mark.
Not only that, the people that they're talking to, their spouses, their friends, family, if they're not enjoying their job, all of their family are probably going to have a lesser opinion of, you know, those organizations. So, yeah, it definitely gets multiplied. And, you know, we live in a world where, you know, that's an opportunity for, you know, I think the right entrepreneurs who can build a culture that's successful. And it's not easy to do,
by the way. Yeah.
But certainly it's a worthwhile pursuit.
Okay. You know, as a CFO, I have a belief that a lot of young businesses, entrepreneurs, small businesses really don't know their numbers. They don't not really understand the financial aspects. You know, what are the most important, and this is my question to you, you know, two or three reports that they need to live and breathe by, because the numbers tell a story, and here they are storytellers, but they're not being able to tell the story for their own business. So is that, number one, do you agree with me? And number two, what would be those kind of reports that you as a CFO would say, you've got to really understand these?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I learned, and this was very hard being a CFO, was that a lot of times numbers are actually the worst thing that a business could be focused on in order to be successful. Because looking at the wrong numbers or looking at numbers in the wrong way can lead you to make some pretty bad decisions. For example, if your goal is only to collect money as fast as possible, you might make some decisions to pressure clients to pay in ways that make them feel like this is not a good relationship mm-hmm. that they have with this, you know, agency or whatever. And so you might lose some business that way, but you might collect a lot faster, right? Or, you know, organizations that say, you know, we need to pay slower, may choose to pay their, you know, key partners and vendors net 90 because they're trying to improve cash flow because that's the number that they were told to look at. But then the vendors say, you know what, I don't think we want to do business with, you know, this company anymore because they pay so slowly. So there's a systemic effect, if you will, on a lot of those things. And so looking at the wrong numbers is pretty damaging. It can be. And of course, as a numbers guy, that's very humbling because, you know, I want to make sure that I'm providing value to, you know, my partners and to, you know, the folks that have entrusted me with helping them understand the business. So I think that that's one thing, as I always try to say that it's not all about the numbers. Sometimes the most important things in a business are, this is a demo thing, unknown and unknowable. You know, you can't measure things, some of the most important things in a business that you would love to know, but, you know, just you can't quantify them. You can't quantify someone's happiness. You know, you can try to, you know, come about some, you know, some ways, but I obviously in a small business, you know, cash flow is important in understanding and monitoring that and finding ways to understand that simply is important. If you're in the business of trying to ultimately be able to sell, you know, the EBITDA line tends to be the one that's most often used, you know, in determining the value of a company. But that is such a at the end of a process, think lines like that, that, you know, you have to flip the page, peel that onion back so many layers before you get to something that's actionable, that, you know, it's not something that I would be ever focused on. So really the numbers that I think are the most important are: define a process that's key to an organization's success, and how to measure that process so that that number, whatever that spits out, is a lever that you can over time control the process so that there's stability in the way in which things are being done. And now those results give you some data that is actually actionable. You can decide that, you know, if what you're, you know, measuring is producing more or less of what you want, then you can change the variables, the inputs into that process in order to achieve the desired outcome.
Okay. All right. The in an agency, we always would wait for, not sit around waiting, but we would always wait for those RFPs, those opportunities. Yeah. And I remember one time in our agency, we had five at the same time, and they're all due about the same time. And we kind of balance which ones we put a lot of effort in, which ones we put a little effort into, but we went after all five. At the end of the day, what suffered was our clients, because we stopped paying attention to our clients while we're trying to win new business. So when it comes to RFPs and agencies really jumping on this, when you were with Payne, how did you guys approach it, and what are some tips or tricks or guidance that you might give to somebody thinking about, I got to get the next, get in all these RFPs?
Yeah. Well, certainly one of the things is don't pursue business with the wrong partners. If your values are important, then, and you are aligning your business practices with those values, then you need to have clients that are also aligned with those values. And that's very hard, because sometimes it's very easy to take money from a client, just as, you know, we all may have done. But in the reality is that if that actually creates a kind of more poisonous environment, because the employees are miserable working with that client, then it ends up being there's an unknown cost there that sometimes is not worth, you know, what you're receiving. So, you know, as it relates to the RFP and business, you know, new business process, I know at Payne and other agencies I've taught, is certainly trying to be as selective as possible. So not going after every client. How do you figure out what the profile is for a successful client, and be as good as you can at filtering out those that are not likely to be successful? Certainly for a lot of agencies, the minimum project size or scope, I think, is an important one. Sometimes, you know, it's every new client is great, and oh, it can always start small and grow into something big. And I think, you know, in smaller agencies, yes, perhaps the bigger the agency gets, I think sometimes the more you really need to focus on fewer relationships, but making sure that those are much stronger. You know, we have developed tiered models, and I know we talked a little bit about that, and, you know, trying to figure out appropriate ways to invest in new business. But as you point out, like, it is certainly, there's a tremendous cost inside the organization to the clients you are trying, you know, to service, to pull them off of that, to go pursue, you know, working on new business. So, you know, is that in the best long-term interest of the agency?
Yeah, and I think
very questionable.
I think agencies sometimes, and I know I fell into this trap with my own agencies, is we're so hungry for it, but we caught ourselves with that five example that it was getting formulaic. It was like, okay, we'll just plug this one in here and plug this one in. We weren't really trying to address and win each RFP. We were just plugging stuff in, trying to make it happen. And I think that was a danger that we recognized. Not only did our clients suffer, but we won a couple, but we didn't win them all. But, you know, in the full scope, we probably didn't approach it right, because we were thinking, this is our opportunity, right?
Yeah.
And didn't really think them through.
There was an agency we talked about this all the time, and that didn't pursue RFPs at all. What they did was they found a client that they wanted to work with, and they developed a campaign, and they went and shared that with those clients, and that's all they did. Hmm. And the reason why they did that, twofold. One was because they wanted to find clients that they wanted to do work for, that they were inspired for, and that their staff was inspired to work for. they got their then their staff to think creatively about solving a problem that was they were not asked to solve. And so there was a training and just kind of a development aspect to it. And then third, when an agency comes to you and says, look, you may not be looking for a new agency, but we've developed some ideas that we just want to share with you. You know, that's definitely out of the box.
Yeah, it is out of the box.
And I mean, they were spending tremendous amount of resources doing it. So I thought that was a pretty incredible way to kind of flip it around.
How'd they do?
They did. I mean, you would have heard of this agency.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm not going to steal that idea because I don't have an agency anymore. And I've been asked, do you want to start an agency again? I was like, absolutely not. Which I'll ask you. Do you miss it? Miss the agency business?
You know what I love is just the creativity that's inside the agency. I love creatives and being around those people is very inspiring. Working at that PR agency, bunch of tremendous communicators. Every email I sent, I felt like I had to double and triple check, make sure there weren't any typos and that I had, you know, written it properly because I was going to get, you know, some slack if I didn't. And, you know, I love being around those people and being around really, really amazing leaders who want to build a culture of success in the right way. You know, David, really, one of the things he believed in was the power of intrinsic motivation and to take incentives and rewards out of the business and really focus on an individual's nature is to want to do a good job. And if you create an environment where they know what the mission is and how they can make an impact, they're going to show up and want to, you know, put their best, you know, effort into that, rather than the way that a lot of managers approach it, which is that, you know, people, would rather sit around and do nothing and just, you know, surf Facebook all day when their boss isn't watching. If that's the way that you perceive, you know, people to be, then of course you're going to create policies, you know, that are about how to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you believe that people are intrinsically motivated and that it's a supervisor's job or a leader's job to figure out how to get them empowered and on a project that, you know, is something that they believe in, then you're going to approach that much differently. And mm-hmm. I think that's the way that you know, we were very successful at Payne and building that culture, and something that I teach, you know, entrepreneurs today to focus on that. And certainly being in an agency where you see so many creative people, you know, telling stories and figuring out how to create, you know, ideas that change the world, that to me is super inspiring. Just how to nurture that, right, is I think, you know, what I wish more of them were doing.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I'm getting three fingers over here, so I got 3 minutes. I do want to bring up, you had mentioned that in our conversation when we first met, you were working on a project about happiness.
Uh-huh.
Let's take the last few minutes and talk about that.
Yeah, I really, you know, in speaking to a lot of dancers about their journey, you know, a lot of them are trying to figure out whether or not they should continue to do what they're doing, you know, is it worth it? And we've talked a little bit about, you know, the definition of success and how I definitely don't think that someone should focus on the end destination as being their only, you know, measure of success. Mm-hmm. You know, dancers, and I think just like anyone in any profession, young people, even, you know, older people are just trying to figure out, you know, what to do with their life and what is their journey and, you know, what is their purpose. And when dancers are asking me, should they keep doing this? You know, my answer to them really is, if you enjoy what you're doing, if you enjoy the journey that you're on, then you should keep doing it. And you should stop focusing all on, you know, the end outcome, and which is something that I think even entrepreneurs and small business owners, if they enjoy showing up every day and putting the effort in, and if that gives them fulfillment, then I think they're on the right path. Even if they haven't made the $1 million that was their original goal for why they started it. And, you know, so, I have been working on this kind of documentary film project to figure out how to tell that story in a way that, you know, can inspire people and hopefully, you know, get people to realize that even though dance is a very visual medium,
sure,
to see their journeys kind of you know, in front of them. Really, everyone is trying to figure that out.
Okay, yeah, thank you for that. When you get there, maybe we come back to the show and we can talk about that more.
Yeah.
And I can't say we can show the video. I guess we could, but I think you know I work for one of my clients is about called Path to Happy Success,
yes.
and we're about helping people find their best career path. And so
yes.
it's all about happiness. And the actual book that it's based on is called Career Happiness and Success. And so the founder of this really started writing this book and bringing this program to life because he wants people to have an opportunity to be happy and successful.
Yeah.
And the two don't always go hand in hand.
No.
That brings us to an end. So thank you so much. If you want to tell the listeners how they might get a hold of you, now's the time.
Yeah, you can find me online at most of those social media channels at Matthew Everett. And Angela, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you so much. And again, before we sign off, I want to remind the listeners this was a two-part series. So if you didn't listen to the first one, you need to go back, download it, and listen to that. And to listen about this one, about Matt talking about his agency life, and the other one about the world of dance. Thank you again for joining us at the cafe. You can find out more about me, read my blogs, or watch my show videos at theponzigroup.com or connect with me on LinkedIn. And if your business is in need of a CMO and you're not ready for a full-time person yet, contact me. I'd welcome the opportunity to explore the benefits of using a fractional CMO. And you can subscribe to this show at the Business Growth Cafe, or we are on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spreaker, and all the other major platforms around the world. Join me next week for lunch at the Business Growth Cafe.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.